Okay, hello everyone. I'm Mike Schwartz. I'm the founder of Glue. We're an open source identity and access management platform. And you can find more about us at glue.org or on Twitter at Glue Federation. So just by a quick show of hands, who thinks software should be free? Okay. So I've been working on this open source podcast and to interview the founders of successful open source companies. And one of the favorite things that I've heard that one of the CEOs told me was that I don't want to make my software a charity for billion-dollar corporations. I think that we don't want to see large companies exploiting open source, smaller open source companies, and we don't want to see large companies exploiting open source developers. So I want to do a revote. So who thinks software should be free? Okay, fewer. So I think open source is such a big topic. And part of what I've learned in this process is that there's a lot of nuance in open source. An open source software could be a product on GitHub, or it could be Red Hat, who just sold to IBM for $34 billion. So I like to categorize open source companies into three categories. So the first category is what I call community open source. So these are open source projects where either a person or a group of people or a group of organizations get together and volunteer their time because they love some problem and they want to solve it with software. And this is a really important type of open source development product or project. The other type of open source software, let's call it corporate open source. So if you look at something like Kubernetes, there's no company behind Kubernetes. There's a foundation that's funded by Google that basically provides money for this software. And we see this a lot. So if a company has some piece of software that doesn't provide a competitive advantage, Google is selling AdWords, they're not selling Linux containers. So a company might decide, well, it'd be better for me to open source this and to get this all the contributions from the community because this particular product is not providing me a competitive advantage. So it pays for me to collaborate, but it's not a business. And then there's a third type of open source software, which is developed by what I call pure play companies. So this is where there's some company whose main business is derived from the open source project. And this is really what I wanted to focus on in my podcast. So before I start talking about that, if you're in the volunteer open source category, it's really important that we figure out business models and ways to fund, you know, developers doing what they love. There's a company called Tidelift, and they have created a distribution of software where they account for which companies are using which of these open source projects and try and send funds back to the developers. It's a really good idea because a lot of important software, open source software code is libraries. And your library might be used by lots of other projects that are commercial, but there's no way to send money back to the library developers. So Tidelift tracks not just the top-level software that companies are buying, but all the underlying open-source components and tries to get funds back to those developers. There's a great podcast on this called The Changelog. If you've never heard of this podcast, it's about open-source development primarily, but they interviewed the founder of Tidelift, and I highly recommend listening to this podcast. Okay, so Glue is a software company, and we have an open source product. So we are primarily concerned about these, in this talk, the pure play open source companies. And so I believe that actually a strong business model can be really helpful for open source projects. It can help fund the open source software that everybody loves. The challenge is finding a balance between giving your software away for free and actually making enough money to pay your developers, your product managers, your marketing, and all the other things that go into a good software company. So when should a business open source its software? I think that what you should think about is that open source should not be your default position. Your default position should be commercial, and you should only open source when there's a very strong reason and you meet a certain high bar that says that open sourcing this software is going to help me. I'd go even further and I'd say that you must be able to build a community behind this open source software, and the community should improve the quality of the code and also lead to more innovation. If you can get community, better code, and innovation, then you have a strong case for open sourcing that software. So Glue, you know, we're 10 years old, and we have, you know, over the years been trying to figure out how do we balance this, giving the software away for free and funding the business. And so I was sitting at my desk one day and thinking, okay, there must be other companies that have gone through the same process. You know, what did they do? So I started looking for comparables. And I stumbled on a talk by one of the founders of Canonical. And I was like, oh, that was really interesting. I learned a lot. And then I looked for another one, and I couldn't find any more. So I said, I was really interested to get more stories out from founders of open source companies. So this idea kind of like brewed in the back of my head for a couple of years. And then last year I said, okay, no one else is going to do this, so I have to do it. So I set out to interview every successful open source company. And I identified about 30 to 40 of them. And so far, the response from the community, from these companies, has been pretty overwhelmingly positive. Almost everybody said yes. So one of the interesting phenomenons in open source is when you talk to, let's say, normal business people about open source, and you say, can you name an open source company? They can name Red Hat. And then after Red Hat, you get a lot of like, isn't that it? And actually, when I went to find this list of successful open source companies, I couldn't find any list. So we had to dig quite a bit to figure out, you know, who they are. But when in the process of doing this interview, what I found is that there's a couple of billion-dollar open source companies out there. Cloudera, Automattic is the company behind WordPress, MongoDB. Confluent is the company behind Kafka. Canonical, you might have used a product called Ubuntu. All these companies are clearly billion-dollar companies today. Either they're publicly traded and that's easy to calculate, or you can just sort of like figure out Canonical based on Red Hat's price. It's worth a lot. And these other companies are also maybe not billion-dollar companies, but they've had sizable and meaningful success. Sam mentioned a business model generation, this book. If you're thinking about starting a company, you should read this book. Because I had sort of a formula for the podcast, and it was based upon the business model canvas. When I started the podcast, I think a lot of people will say business model it sort of interchangeably with revenue stream. But the business model is more than just how you make money. So I wanted to create a more holistic view of the business model and how open source fit in as part of this business model. So the business model includes how do you interact with customers, how do you segment the market, who are your partners, what's your value proposition, what are your revenues, what are your costs, what are your key resources. So all of these things together make up a business model, and so. There's a number of blogs out there that talked about, okay, what are the open source business models? And you can Google and find them. But I found them quite lacking in detail about the holistic picture of the business and how open source fit within that business. So I used this business model canvas sort of as a model for the questions that I asked the founders of these companies. So every business is different. So I have been able to pick up some common themes throughout all of these talks, but one of the common themes is that every business is different. So you take a company like Confluent, who makes Kafka, and they're experiencing rapid growth. I mean, it's like you probably didn't even, this product probably didn't even exist like maybe like 5 years ago, and it's already a $1 billion company. So the challenges that a company like Confluent is having are so different from the challenges that, let's say, Netgate, which is they make a firewall, an open source firewall software package, and they've been around for years. But that's a very mature market, the firewall market. So it's hard to. So if you're a founder, and this is just general business advice, you'll hear a lot of advice. A lot of it will be true for certain types of business, but I think part of the challenge of business is knowing which of those rules of thumb do you just ignore, and which of them do you apply to your business. So, but one theme that emerged from every company I spoke with is that the community is really important, and that the community is the difference. So the advantage of the community for open source is that you can think of it as like the Uber QA process. You will test your product in all the ways you know how, but the community will deploy your software in lots of ways that you didn't think of. They will ask questions about things that are unclear in your documentation. They will point out bugs. They will evangelize your product. So I would say a good portion of the benefit of your open source software as part of your model is going to be derived from the community. So when do you build the community? Some companies start with a large community sort of in place, and other companies start with nothing and try and build a community. If you can do the former, that's way easier, but not always how it works. But one interesting thing is almost every company has a global team. So at Glue, we have people from Indonesia, India, Bangladesh, Ukraine, Moldova, Belarus, Russia, Cameroon, Argentina, Bolivia, Colombia, I'm probably missing a couple places. Oh, in the U.S. So anyway, we have a philosophy of hiring the best people wherever they are, and we don't want to discriminate based on location. And I found that this is true for not every, but almost every one of the companies I spoke with. Another theme, so if you start a traditional software company, you probably will hire a lot of salespeople, go to conferences, get expensive booths, all this kind of thing, normal commercial process. But what I noticed is that many of the open source companies relied on inbound, meaning that the customers would find them on the internet and call them. And they didn't have a large sales force. So I thought Glue was sort of weird in doing this, and then I found out that actually it's quite common for open source companies. So it's actually quicker to write commercial software because you can sort of define what you need, you can put developers on it, you can get it out there. When you involve the community, actually it slows down development a little bit. I think what you end up with is better through going through this open source development process and methodology, but it is slower. Now, what types of software should be open source? There is no rule here, but one of the things I've noticed is that infrastructure software tends to be a good fit for open source. So if you look at the podcast, there's a large concentration of databases, MongoDB, let's say even CloudEra with Hadoop, TimescaleDB, MariaDB, there's a number of databases. Redis even, for example. So the founder of Redis said to me that no new databases have been released recently that weren't open source. So, but in general, I think infrastructure has been a good fit for open source. The operating system, Ubuntu or Red Hat, even platforms like WordPress, you could say could be infrastructure-y. So now let's talk about some of my favorite business models. Actually, I have a blog about this where I go into more detail. But so the question was, how do you make money, or how do you monetize open source software? And so we're just talking about the revenue stream here now, but this is a question a lot of people are asking. So I just want to highlight a couple of my favorite ways to generate revenues through open source. So the first one I'll say is support is not a great business. Mike Howard from MariaDB calls it the support meal ticket. Like, it might pay your food, but it might not. The reason support's such a terrible business is because there's something called the open source dilemma, where companies only buy support when they have problems, so they might not renew their support subscriptions. So that's not a great situation. And just in general, it doesn't really scale that well. So it's just not a great business. Open core. So remember in the beginning I said that that open source should not be a charity for billion-dollar organizations. So open core is where part of the software is open source and free, and part of the features are, let's say, commercial. I think this is a fair game for open source businesses, because what if we were to say that the features that we're going to charge for are only needed by billion-dollar companies? So you can be a purist and say everything should be open source, but why are we funding billion-dollar companies? Let them pay. The balance is how do we figure out which of those features that can we charge for without our software being basically like the free part of it is so useless that you have to pay for it really to do anything useful with it. So I think that's where the balance lies. But I think open core should be seriously considered if you want to make your product open source into a business. And I think that there are fair ways to do it. Cloud. Eliot Horowitz from MongoDB is emphatic that this is the best method. Take the open source software and offer a hosted version of it and charge a monthly fee for that. That's valuable to customers. Nobody wants to operate anymore. The challenge with this is that offering a cloud service requires established operating processes and procedures, and may require capital to get economies of scale. However, the capital requirements have gone way down with things like Amazon and cloud computing. So you should seriously consider this cloud business model if you want to monetize the open source. If you can do this, investors understand it, and it's incredibly valuable to customers. Distribution. So sometimes people say to me that, well, Red Hat can't be repeated. You know, it was sort of a unique opportunity for them at the time. But actually, they've defined a really interesting business model. They took a bunch of free open source software, most of which they didn't write. They bundled it up. They QA'd it. They gave it a product number. They support it for 5 years. They have productized this open source bunch of code and made it consumable in a way that companies can buy it. That can be replicated in different markets. Maybe not in the operating system market, but you could say, my company, Glue, we write software, but we also use open source software, and we bundle it together, and we call it the Glue server. So you could say, to a certain extent, we're following this model. Anaconda is another good example. They didn't write hardly any of that code, but they bundle it up, and they give companies an enterprise license. Go to your procurement department at a bank and ask them to buy open source software, and they might give you back a blank stare, because they must have certain indemnifications about the IP being clear. They might have a checkbox that says that they need some liability protection. So taking open source software and making it consumable and productizing it is actually a really viable business model. And then tools. So I like this business model a lot, because it provides a clear boundary between what's free and what's not free. So at Glue, we believe that the one server version of Glue should be free. But if you want to deploy clusters of Glue servers, well, that's mostly just needed by big businesses where 7 hours of downtime per year is so expensive that they'd rather make the investment in, you know, in building these highly available multi-data system clusters than enduring that 7 hours of downtime. So we said clusters is fair game. So we built tools around making it easy to deploy the Glue server in clusters. Cloud Era is another example where Hadoop is like legitimately open source and free. Lots of companies are building great products around Hadoop. What does Cloud Era do? They provide all these awesome enterprise tools that make Hadoop easier for organizations to deploy and operate at scale and to make useful. So I like the tools model. I think it allows you to clearly say, this is valuable to customers, it's not needed by the community, we're going to charge for that, and that's fine. So just to highlight a couple of the podcasts, this is the guy who really inspired me to start the podcast, Mike Olson from Cloud Era. He's I call him the professor of open source. He's very experienced. He worked for Sleepy Cat, which is the company behind Berkeley DB. And also, he worked for Oracle. And anyway, he's really awesome. And if you listen to only one of these podcasts, I'd say listen to this one. You can also look for his talk on the Stanford Business Series. I saw Nextcloud is here. I went to Stuttgart to interview Frank Karlicek, the founder of Nextcloud. He's a brilliant guy, and of the open source entrepreneurs I have interviewed, I'd say he probably has one of the most pure views of open source's sort of the open source mission. So it was a super interesting podcast. He's also the only VC I met, or I'm sorry, the only investor or entrepreneur I met who actually told the VCs, like, keep your money, I'm starting a new company, and I don't care if you invested $10 million. You're telling me to do stuff I don't want to do, and I want it to be open source. And he walked away from the VCs, so he's a brave guy, too. Everyone knows Ubuntu, obviously. Mark Shuttleworth is also super insightful in the industry. There's a lot of controversy today about licensing. For example, Amazon is taking software that's open source and commercializing it, and to the perhaps detriment of some of the companies that wrote that software. Mark had some really interesting insights into that dilemma, so I highly recommend that one. And this guy, the founder of Redis, Ofer Bengal, he started more businesses than anyone else I know. He started off in the aerospace industry, then he made toys, then he worked in telco, then he worked for a bunch of other companies. I've started 4 companies, so I'd never met anyone who started more companies until I talked to this guy. So he just has a really, really, a lot of interesting insights into entrepreneurship in general and open source software. There's actually 21 podcasts up right now. I'm editing number 22 which will be Puppet. So if you want to listen to these podcasts, there's a URL, opensourceunderdogs.com. Also, it's on all the platforms now. So iTunes, Google, Stitcher, SoundCloud, even platforms I haven't heard of, because apparently they all just grab each other's content, or it's on RSS, so it's basically everywhere now. So I think that's it. I'll take questions now. Thank you to the organizers of OzCal for this great event, and happy to take any questions. I'm going to ask questions if I don't get any. Is anyone here thinking of starting a business around open source software? That's good, because it's a really bad idea. So, Sam? Might start another one. Yes.
Issues using open source software to make money because of the licenses or agreements. So some software you can use it for and for free and not making money out of it. Some they allow you to use them and produce incomes. So in general, so how this a new company that plans to use open software because it's small and cannot afford buying expensive platforms make money? So which are the software, how we should look on the market, which one to pick up, is an issue in general?
Well, there's a couple of questions in there. The first one I'll take is, there's a saying that open source is only free if you don't value your time. So it might make sense to not, let's say, buy commercial software, but then again, if it takes you too long to deploy it, maybe you should just pay the license fee. And I'd also say that, so when you're developing software, there's two types of licenses. There's developer-friendly open source license and, let's say, user-friendly open source license. So developer-friendly open source license, like Apache, was made so that companies could collaborate on software but then build them into their own product. So Apache web server, IBM contributed a lot, but they use it in the IBM in their IBM web products. And so whereas user-friendly open source license is more about giving a person the freedom to use the software no matter what, but not necessarily companies the freedom to make money off of it. So I think there's a really important distinction there in the reason behind the licenses for the software. You know, in terms of, from the company perspective of how to, let's say, make money from open source, I would say, listen, the podcasts are a good starting point. They'll give you a lot of ideas. You know, some software, maybe there should be no monetization of it. And in those cases, working maybe with Tidelift, who I mentioned in the beginning, might make more sense. But, you know, because businesses are so diverse and the software projects themselves are so diverse, it's hard to generalize specifically. You need to look at each product. Maybe one last point would be, free has been a part of the marketing mix for lots of products. TV was free, anyone could watch TV, but then the businesses around TV figured out we could sell advertising. Adobe Acrobat Reader is free, but they sell the authoring tool. So the fact that open source is free doesn't make it different from commercial products. So there's a difference between free and open source, and there's also a difference between free of cost and freedom, your freedom to either use it as a developer or a user. So the more I've worked in this area, the more I've realized that how much nuance there is in terms of these terms like license and free and open source. And other questions? Well, okay, one in the back.
Thanks. Thank you for your very well-researched talk. It's very clear. If I may, I'd contribute two comments. One is, as somebody who works in an open source business myself, I feel that open source is very good for the consumer, even when it can be very difficult for the business people in the organization, is for the reasons you've described, right? But I think it's important to recognize that it really keeps the product and the company honest in many cases in a way that non-open source does not, because your customer can often walk away from you at any time and get the same software or the same service from that software from lots of other companies, or they can even fork the software and take it in-house. which is very challenging if your business model depends on them not doing that. But I think open source is good for society personally in terms of commercial products, in that it gives the user choice and it provides a lot of competition in the market. Having something that's free and universally available can really change dynamics for other products that are there. So I see a value as a consumer and as a user, even though it's much more difficult for the businesses to operate in that field.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. Open source, I think, can be important for the culture of the company, because I know a lot of the people in the organization are motivated by the mission of the open source, and that can be important to the culture of the business. So at Glue, it's incredibly important to motivate the team and myself, because we believe that, yes, we want to make money, we all want to eat, but we also love this mission, that we know that there's thousands of Glue server deployments out there where they're not paying anything and that they derive a lot of value from the code. So I think that's important. And then the other issue which you touched upon is that a lot of successful open source projects create an ecosystem where a lot of people make money. If you look at WordPress, there's a company called WP Engine that hosts WordPress that's one of the biggest companies in my hometown, Austin. Also, there's lots of individual WordPress developers out there. So the company behind WordPress is not monetizing 100%. They've created this ecosystem around the software, which creates a better, it creates less risk and more diversity for the people using that platform, and ultimately more value for Automatic itself. But I think if you can get that the community, but also an ecosystem working for you, then that makes an even more powerful reason, justification for open sourcing your product. Probably over. Any last questions? Okay, thank you, everyone.